It's time to wake up with Finch and Kane now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Wake Up, your home, your radio home for truth, justice, and democracy. And if it bothers you that our voting rights and the right to free and fair elections, not to mention our civil rights, reproductive rights, and independent media and academic freedom, and our safety as a civilization are under threat by the Trump administration, well, you are in the right place. I'm Melissa Kane, your host, along with my good friend Bill Finch on this gorgeous Sunday morning. Bill, hello. It is so good to see you, my friend. We haven't been in the same place at the same time in a very long time, but I've got to say, I wanted to see your face this morning because right now I am feeling as gutted as the Voting Rights Act was this week. And I've been wanting to talk about this with you.
You know, one of my favorite songs is The Day the Music Died. And I felt like the day the music died. Listen, this show is called Wake Up because we want to wake everyone up to the great history of the United States of America, the great democratic history, small d, big d, any way you want it. You know, this show was meant to help us preserve our freedoms,
to wake people up.
What's that?
This is what I need. I needed your voice this morning.
We have to fight back because this is a country that made much of its wealth by buying and selling other human beings with black skin, impregnating their women and selling their babies. We have a vile racist history that we had to make right, and we made it right in the 1960s with a Civil Rights Act and a Voting Rights Act that started to undo the terrible atrocities that America perpetrated on many of its now citizens, and we're going backwards. Donald Trump is bringing us back to the Ku Klux Klan era. This is an outrage. And if you want a show that is red meat for the ideals of this great nation, then this is the place for you every Sunday. We are not going to be silenced. We are going to keep shouting from the rooftops, from our radio waves, that there are great people that are Democrats in this society fighting against this slide back into autocracy, this Hitler-esque movement in the United States called MAGA. We are going to fight against it with every last breath we have, and we enjoin all of you listeners to get involved, to get excited, and today to listen to the great governor of the state of Connecticut, Ned Lamont's our guest, soon
he
to be
is.
Here.
Well, you know, before we get to our governor, and I think it's really interesting, I've been thinking about it, really interesting that we have him here today and important, I think we need to sort of talk a little bit for those who don't quite understand it about what happened this week with the Supreme Court decision in Louisiana versus Calais, where basically the court's decision strikes down the map that included a second majority black district, right? Reverted to a map with only one. These are little details, but what it does is severely weaken Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, and this is what we're talking about. And it makes it incumbent upon anyone trying to prove that this is racist or anything that they're doing is racist. It makes it incumbent on people trying to prove that something is blatantly racist, is a very hard thing to do.
If you read between the lines, they're saying that fighting racism is not important anymore. There is no prejudice based on race. Of course there is.
Right.
Of course there is.
We have to remember, this was 60 years ago that this Voting Rights Act was. This is not ancient history. Right? This was in...
I was
this
10.
Was, oh, no, this was in, you know...
But we
during,
celebrated
I believe
it.
This was in Bill's first marriage that this happened.
Yeah, go by marriages. No. Yeah, but, thanks.
but it's... I mean, we are not, as a country, no matter what anyone says...
I wasn't married
ready
at 10, by the way.
...to dissolve any part of our Voting Rights Act. We must have place security in place, guardrails in place to make sure that we do the right thing. It's something that has been proven in this country again and again and again. And I have to say, I've spent this week listening to experts that I trust. I'm reading people like Christopher Armitage, the Existentialist Republic, and Joyce Vance and Robert Reich. And I've been trying to find some peace. I'm trying to find a way forward, a path to beat this nightmare gerrymandering race that's been basically, you know, race. It's like an escalation that's been set up by the Supreme Court. And Bill, I want your thoughts on this because I'm feeling like, yes, we need to fight like hell to win the House and Senate back in November. But I'm wondering, will that be enough? Because I feel like, isn't this now a game where almost by definition, the country, and the rights and values we clearly disagree on can't help but be pulled back and forth based on close election cycles.
You know, listen, this is not in a vacuum. We go to the Powell memo. We go to all these, the Project 2025. This was all designed
they wrote it out for
to
us.
Keep
the writing
women pregnant
was literally
in the kitchen,
on the wall.
Keep black people down. Keep the rich getting richer. This is a terrible thing that our country's going through. And unfortunately, because the Democrats were not strong, and the anger that Trump was able to fan the flames of was very strong, we lost the last election. Even after he was indicted on 39 counts, even after he tried to overturn the government with
to your earlier point, this started long before Trump. This is something that's building since, I would argue, since the Voting Rights Act was passed.
Listen, democracy is very fragile. Thankfully, we saw Orbán thrown out in Hungary. But,
it's a very different structure over there.
But democracy's fighting authoritarianism, Melissa, all the time.
Yep.
It's easy to slide back into, I'm watching the show Outrageous on television, and it's about five children, and they're wealthy and they're aristocratic, and it's the 1930s. One is dating Oswald Mosley, the fascist. Another one's dating Adolf Hitler, and the other one is a socialist, and the other daughter is writing about it.
Okay, I just want you to know this is not a show I'd want to watch.
It's a because it's a microcosm of what's happening now. We're being torn apart.
We are
some
being
people
torn
see
apart.
Simple answers with authoritarianism because they're so angry at paying
and not
almost
enough
$5
people are
an
outraged. What fascinates me is when you look at the polls. Yes, Trump's polls are way down, but there's still almost a third of the country that is really A-OK with what's going on.
If we look at the demographics of America, there's no reason why the Democratic Party should poll so low. If people knew what we stood for.
So this is what that, I think that's a very good point. My question is, are we doing what needs to be done?
No.
I don't think we are.
No.
And I think about Democrats and in Democratic states. And I, for the first time, I really am wondering, people have sort of been bandying about this term soft secession. Do we need soft secession? Do blue states, do Democrats
and we're
in power
better than the red states
need,
for crying
but,
out loud.
No, but truly,
we
do
live
we
better.
Need to defy? That is true. The standard of living is generally much higher.
We don't murder as many people in the blue
states.
We don't have as many starving
laws.
Children.
That's right.
We have an activist government that Ned Lamont leads.
So do we need to defy the Supreme Court at this point? And does it come down to state leadership mattering even more so than federal? I'm going to posit that the governor's races and secretary of state's races this November are more important, as important than Congress when it comes to how we're going to continue to protect our rights. And I'll tell you, with that in mind, I think we're damn lucky to have with us this morning our own Connecticut governor, Ned Lamont, who's been a steadfast leader against creeping fascism and has pushed back, along with Attorney General Tong, against the illegal advances of this administration at every turn. And I'm really excited because we're going to talk with him this morning about that fight and about how he deals with increasingly partisan politics, both in Hartford and in D.C. But we're also going to get a chance to talk with him about state finances and his budget, which was just passed by the legislature, about his administration's focus on early childhood education and leveling the huge opportunity gap. And we're going to talk with him about his unprecedented run for a third term during this very unprecedented time. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to be joined by the 89th governor of the state of Connecticut, Governor Ned Lamont. So please stay tuned. We will be right back with Governor Lamont.
What's going on in Connecticut? Find out on Wake Up with Finch and Kane, only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And we are back. I told you that was going to be brief. This is Melissa Kane along with Bill Finch on WICC, and we are honored to have Governor Ned Lamont on with us this morning. Governor, sir, are you with us?
I am with you. Hey, Bill, Melissa, congratulations on your show.
Oh, thank you. We are so glad that we are able to have you join us for a little while this morning. Thank you so much. There's a lot to talk about. I think we want to just jump right in. You know, I don't know if you were on when Bill and I were talking before the break, but it seems like what wins is talking to people about what is being done right, certainly in places like Connecticut, where Democrats are in charge, rather than focusing on what Trump is doing wrong. And I wonder what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I think What we're doing here is the opposite of what he's doing in Washington. First of all, we get a balanced budget done on time.
Woo-hoo.
We get it done on a bipartisan basis. And we've done it now 8 years in a row.
I believe it just went through the legislature this week. Am I right? They were, your budget was just passed this week?
Exactly. The budget passed in the House and the Senate with all the Democrats and about half the Republicans. So that was a pretty good thing.
That's a really good
thing. A big help for our towns and cities in terms of education, funding, and municipal aid, something Bill Finch can identify with, and yeah, a lot of child care.
Listen, you've done some amazing things, Governor. We'd like to talk to you a little bit about those things and why you're seeking this unprecedented third term. You know, there's no secret on this show that we're a Democratic response show, and I was very encouraged when you decided to run again, because I think you have, you know, really done the bipartisan thing in a great way. I know that Teddy, Lindsay, Emily, and Annie are all behind you. Tell us why you're going after this third term.
We're off to a good start. We have a lot of work to do, especially when it comes to affordability. We're just able to cut everybody's electric bills by about $30-$35 a month. But now we're sitting down renegotiating the Millstone Agreement. You know something about the environment bill and what we've done on wind and solar. Make sure we have affordable, clean energy going forward. Just getting started there. I got to bring down the cost of health care. We're getting our pensions under control. Now it's health care. And we can talk about how we can bend the curve there. Two big priorities going forward, plus education and workforce.
Did you ever think you were going to have to fight any president of our own country to continue to build wind power, clean energy?
Bill, it was he's much worse than he was the first time around. I overlapped
with
him for 2 years. And look what he did on Revolution Wind. I mean, it's you can say I don't like wind. I can push back on it. But when the wind is 80% built,
right,
with independent outside money, $5 billion, they shut it down Labor Day. We got it reopened. They shut it down right before Christmas. We got it reopened. And now it's generating power.
So,
and this is part of our future, is to
cheap
get
power.
More power that we can control.
Yeah, cheap power that's not Arab oil and not fossil fuels from America. It gives us energy independence. I can't believe we're fighting our own president to make the climate change slow down and give consumers relief on their bills. I just can't believe we're fighting our own government to do that. That seems like maybe that's why his numbers are in the tank.
I can't believe we're fighting most of the fights we're fighting, and yet we are. And I have to say, sir, Governor, I am, every time I see the lawsuits that you and Attorney General Tong are filing on behalf of the state of Connecticut against the sort of authoritarian creep of this administration, I am heartened. I really want to talk a little bit about the role of governors in states that are have Democratic leadership. And I'd love your thoughts on what has to happen over the next couple of years of the Trump administration, and how you fight back and how you fight back and how you work together when needed, if needed, or do you?
That's exactly right. Look, everybody has their own role. I work very closely with Attorney General Tong. He has sued this administration over 50 times, saved a lot of money that President Trump wanted to take back, money that was already appropriated, and we were putting to work for mental health in our schools and the such. I've got a great congressional delegation that pushes back. I'd love to see, Jim Hines as head of intelligence. He wouldn't have to look up the Strait of Hormuz on Google to know what's going on.
I think we can all agree we'd love that. Yes.
Rosa DeLauro, head of appropriations. This is why this election is so important. You know, and look, I don't go out of my way to pick fights, but I stand up for Connecticut where we have to. And tomorrow, Monday, we're going to be standing in front of the Supreme Court building talking about the Trust Act and how we're protecting our immigrants.
That's wonderful.
That's great. And we never thought we would be fighting our own government, did we, Governor?
Never did. No, Bill, never did.
Listen, I'm dying to get into your relationship with other governors, because as Melissa rightly points out, the country is really looking for leaders. You know, as a former mayor and you as a governor, we know the buck stops with us. and we can't print money like the federal government. We have no fiscal policy. We have to deal with the cards that were dealt. And I always thought CEOs, people who've been through that gauntlet of governor or mayor, are better suited to be president just because of that fact that they've been tested and they've had to balance budgets and they've had to compromise and work with the other side of the aisle. Like, I bemoan it every time I go up to the Capitol, how partisan it's gotten at the state capitol. There were a few years there that the Washington disease didn't hit our capitol. But, yeah. You know, we have Governor
Shapiro's.
Feels
very different now.
Yeah, it's very different. But now we have a new breed of governors that you're part of, Pritzker, Newsom, Beshears, and Shapiro. All four are interested in running for president. I guess the first question is, are you?
No, not me. I love Connecticut. I'm kicking, but I don't have to worry about that. But you're actually right, Bill. I mean, I work very closely with my fellow governors. I start with the governors in this region. It was during COVID because the White House was nowhere while we were trying to work our way through COVID. I worked very closely with Charlie Baker, a Republican in Massachusetts.
He was a great
Gina
governor.
Gina Raimondo, a Democrat.
Remember when you were working with Governor Raimondo, right, of Rhode Island. Yeah, that's right.
And Governor Mills.
And, as you know, these borders are sort of artificial when it comes to wind power. We do that alongside Rhode Island. When it comes to clean air and clean water, it doesn't work if I just do it by myself. So we do that a lot on a regional basis. And your bigger question, Bill, I'm generally pretty impressed with the governors. They got big hearts. You know where they stand on big issues. But they also know how to get things done.
Yeah.
And for the Democrats, the progressives, they know how to get things done.
What do you see as the difference between those four? You know, several of them have their own means. Obviously, Pritzker has his own means to help self-fund a campaign. But other than that, their policies, they all seem to be pretty pragmatic. To small progressive. You know, like, what do you make of them? What's your sense about how each one of those? Let's start with Shapiro. Could he be president?
Josh Shapiro is incredibly talented, you know, knows exactly what he's doing, a great manager, and I think pretty darn good on the stump and getting better and better. And he's from a very purple, very important state, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So my instinct is he gets reelected big time, and everybody's taking a second, third, and fourth look at him.
Now, Beshears, now he's from a red state, pretty much.
He is super impressive. At the John Bailey dinner last year, Governor, I don't know about you, but I thought he really...
Gave you goosebumps, right?
He was amazing.
What do you think about Beshears?
Look, we invited him there for that reason. I love the fact that, you know, he wins in a very red state, Kentucky, and he wins resoundingly. And he wins by taking care of kitchen table issues and focusing on that.
Thank you.
And how Democrats can help you make life a little more affordable for you and your kids.
Now, quickly, what about Newsom and Pritzker? What do you see there?
First of all, JB is a hoot. I mean, he is very entertaining. And he would match up incredibly with, Trump in terms of persona and personality.
Yeah.
And Gavin is...
Oh, we lost you, Governor. We've just lost the governor. I don't know that he even knows that. For some reason, we lost the call. We're going to try and get the governor back. But until then...
Well, I will say I did have a chance to work with Governor Newsom when I was mayor of Bridgeport and he was mayor of San Francisco. And
I did not know that.
One of the wonderful things about being mayor is nobody gives a hoot about how big your city is. Bloomberg told me once, he said, Bill, we're all the same. I just have more digits. To which I said, yeah, personally and professionally. But a pothole's a pothole, you know. A kid on food stamps is a kid on food stamps. It's all the same whether you're a governor or a mayor. And we've got the governor back
now. I think we've
got
the governor back. Governor, are you back on? Can you hear us?
I am back. Bill, don't hang up on me.
No, we did. To be clear, we did not drop you.
So we were on Governor Newsom, and I was saying how I had a little chance to work with him as mayor and was very impressed by him. What do you think?
I'll tell you, everybody thinks he's, a blow-dried liberal, but I also can tell you he really knows his stuff. He knows the inner workings of his budget as well as anybody. He knows how to get things done.
Yeah, he sure does.
Well, we can't elect a blow-dried liberal.
No,
that's
for
sure.
And I like that term, a blow-dried liberal. I got to write that down. I'm going to bring things back to Connecticut.
Did you invent that, Governor?
No, please don't use it again either.
Ned Lamont says
I don't know.
That
I don't
Governor
know. It's
Newsom
a good one.
Is not
it's
a blue-dyed
stick,
liberal.
Unfortunately.
I think it's fantastic because I never saw him as that. You know, running San Francisco is a tough city to run, and he did a great job. So, certainly it's not liberal and conservative. It's balancing a budget and being pragmatic.
And that's a tough city to run, just like Bridgeport. Yeah. Bringing it back to Connecticut, I'm going to be up at the Capitol tomorrow, Governor, to lobby to make sure that House Bill 5043 passes out of the Senate. And this is something that I know is close to your heart. And, Governor, I am very thankful to you. We've worked together for many years when I was chair of Connecticut Against Gun Violence. You have been an incredible champion for gun violence prevention. You wanted this is a bill that came from you, from your office. You understand more than anyone. We talk about porous borders. We talk about the need to keep people safe. This is a bill that closes loopholes in our ghost gun laws. And I want to thank you for pushing for it. And maybe you could tell us a little
Another
bit about
reason
your thoughts
why you
about
want to live
it.
In a blue state.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Safer.
Exactly.
It is safer. I mean, first of all, we do a lot of things that maybe seem symbolic. Not when it comes to gun safety.
That's right.
Our gun violence Amen. Is one third what it is in places like Georgia. Our suicide rate is much lower. We keep people safe, but you got to continue to modernize those laws, Melissa. And
yes.
You mentioned ghost guns. A lot of these undetectable plastic guns that are coming across the border. Be much better if we could do that on a federal basis.
Yes.
But one little thing we're trying to do in this bill is you can take a pistol like a Glock and easily convert a pistol into a machine gun.
Yeah.
And I can't figure out why that was so partisan up there in the Senate.
I can't either, sir. We are going to have to take a quick break for news and weather, bottom of the hour. We are so glad to have Governor Lamont with us, and he'll be with us after the break.
Stay tuned for more
Stay
good
tuned.
Quips
Hold
from our
thought.
Governor.
Blow-dried liberal.
Let's find out what's on their minds. It's Wake Up with Finch and Kane, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Bill, you make me laugh. We are back with Governor Lamont.
People make us laugh, but this is no laughing matter.
No.
And Governor, I just want to tell you that I know that our party, the Democrat, this is a Democratic response show. We get so much right-wing garbage on the radio. They wanted us to give the other side for an hour every Sunday, and we're so proud that you came on the show to help us with that. We'll probably have your opponent in a possible primary at some point, State Representative Josh Elliott. But the focus on affordability is so important, and I have to say, you know, working for a labor union, we're very so proud of the record that the Democratic Party and you have led with affordability in terms of getting good union jobs in Connecticut. The other day I was there when
you
said—
I'm not sure people understand that, actually, enough.
Well, I don't either, and that's why I feel insufficient sometimes in my job. Have I done enough? Should I do more? But, Governor, you're a big help to that. We know that union jobs mean that they're taken care of in retirement and their health care is paid for. And as a beneficiary of great health care that I need right now, I'm just so thankful. I wish everybody had what I had. And you have been pushing that. And you said the other day, we want everybody to know this is a union state. And I can't tell you how proud that made me. So thank you. But tell us a little bit more about it. I know Melissa wants to see how that fits into your reelection campaign.
Thank you, Bill. You know, first of all, thanks to the electric workers. Thanks to all the trades. We are rebuilding a state that's pretty old. We're building more new schools. We are doing rail, highways, bridges.
The walk bridge.
The rails needed.
These are all good-paying jobs. These are all Connecticut jobs. That's part of what a PLA, Project Labor Agreement, is all about. Make sure these are Connecticut jobs.
Yeah.
Make sure that there's no wage theft. That's the bill we just passed the other day.
That Thank you.
General contractor, you're responsible to make sure that the health care and wages that you're contracted for are being paid, not just by your folks, but also those that you contract with.
Yep.
These are all ways that we're making sure. Talk about affordability. Just pay people a little bit more. That's how we get things done.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Governor. I have to say, you brought something up. I sat for a while on the Commuter Rail Commission, and I think that is, you know, a sore spot in this state. We really, really need to be updating our rails, and I wonder if that's a priority for you in this next term.
Priority for me and a priority for a guy named Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And we're
Amtrak Joe.
New Haven to New York is already the fastest it's been in 10 or 15 years. We're fixing every bridge. We're straightening out the rail. So it's faster rail and also more frequent rail. And that's good for the environment, gets cars off the road, and allows people to get home sooner and see their kids.
One of the things that I campaigned on when I was a campaigner was if you could cut the 20 minutes off that you're talking about from Bridgeport to New York City,
yeah.
That's like sliding our real estate values to where Norwalk is.
And
Norwalk
sadly,
to where Stanford
that has
is,
not
and
yet
Stanford
been
to where White Plains
not
is.
Not much. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, our property values are going to go up because we're sliding our geography toward New York City, which, as Mike Bloomberg used to tell us, you know, as New York goes, so goes Connecticut.
Hey, Bill, I just say, I phrase it this way. Over the next, 6 to 7 years, Bridgeport will be as close to New York City as Stanford is today. And to your point, that expands the whole housing market big time.
It's something that's transformative. I know Governor Malloy with bus rapid transit transformed, but this is even bigger. When we can straighten those curves out and get people into work faster and back home faster, we improve our property values, and in Connecticut, property values are the whole thing. We've got this mess with school funding. Schools are funded based on the value of parents' properties. We know it's not fair, but it's what we're dealt. And if you can increase property values, you're improving the schools, you're improving the public health, you're improving the libraries, you're improving everything.
Yeah, the sooner the better. The sooner the better.
Yeah.
Tell us, Governor, a little bit more about your campaign.
How are you going to win?
Yeah. How are you going to win? Why you did decide to run for a third term, and what it means to you?
Yeah, Melissa, turning the clock back 10 plus years, I thought the state was in a pretty tough place. We were lurching from deficit to deficit. Our economy was, in the tank, not growing very fast at all. And a lot of people were leaving the state. Our population was going in the wrong direction. That's all turned around right now. But the bigger point, you can't say, hey, this is what I've accomplished. You also have to say, this is where we're going. That's what a campaign is all about. And Susan Beiswitz and I, like to say, we're progressives who not just talk the talk, but get stuff done. You got to say, what have they got done and what do they want to get done? And I think I highlighted, I'll say one other thing, because Bill was mentioning education. You know, we've got the biggest investment in education, 170 plus 100 million in this budget. That's going to help. But I want to make sure we don't just do more money, but how we make sure that money goes into the classroom and makes the biggest difference. So one of the things I want to get right over the next few years is special education. And a lot of our towns, especially the smaller towns, you get four or five kids with really special needs. They can't manage it. The kids go an hour away. You're paying $100,000. To some remote place. It's not good for the kid. It's not good for your school budget. So that's another big priority we have going forward.
I know that your priority during this last term was, and I believe will continue to be, early childhood education and providing the scaffolding that's needed for kids early on, kids and families. Can you speak a little more to that?
Yeah, Melissa. First of all, I love Wallet Hub said we're the most family-friendly state and the best state for working moms in the country. But you know what that means? It means we made a $300 million down payment. Now we've doubled that to over $600 million. And that means we're going to have universal pre-K for every family, free of charge, anybody earning up to $100,000, then greatly discounted thereafter. Every kindergarten teacher tells me that's the best thing in the world for a kid, maybe heads off some special education and learning needs. And every mom and dad says, talk about affordability. I got two little kids. That's going to save me $18,000, $20,000 a year. I think it's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know myself as a mother, I think about this, and especially when you talked about the importance of improving special ed and access to special ed and local access to special ed, I know that that really speaks to a lot of people in this state. So I'm glad that that's something you are going to be focusing on.
As I sit here and listen to us talk about things that are going to reduce the cost of working families, I'm a little discouraged in a way because it's so hard. I've been doing this all my life. Ned, you've been doing it all your life. Melissa, you've been. And the public just seems to think, well, I'm angry about this X thing and I'm going to vote. We've got to get people to have and this is why this show is important, I believe. We've got to get people to have a little bit more nuanced understanding that if we're going to get reduced costs, you've got to vote for people who are going to vote like Ned Lamont, a nation-leading early childhood education. You got to get those policies.
I think you're talking about connecting the dots on a level that may be a little bit more. We've had this. We've had this argument.
I get in the weeds too much.
We get
Melissa
in the weeds.
Pulls me back,
well, but I understand what you're saying. The problem is, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Governor, that people have very, very short attention spans. And
look at what's
that
happened with the climate issue. There's no more larger existential issue than climate change. You've been really good on that, Governor. Maybe talk a little bit about how we're going to get that back in the leading, one of the leading issues.
How do we get people to pay attention, I think, is what we're asking.
How do we
you.
Do that? Democrats are so much better than Republicans in all these issues. How are you going to do it?
Well, first, let me back up because there's a lot there.
Sorry.
There are a lot of progressives,
we tend to do that.
That fought for many years for the fight for $50 to $15 minimum wage or universal early childhood education. They can talk about it. We've got it done. That's what I say on the progressive side. And frankly, on the Republican side, every 4 years I run against somebody that says, I'm going to eliminate the income tax. Obviously, they all raised it. Roland raised it. Rail raised it 30% or on our watch anyway. And who's done it? We eliminated the income tax for working families. Plus, you get money back with the earned income tax credit.
Right.
And plus, we didn't reduce taxes for millionaires, but we did reduce taxes for middle class families. About $400 million, by far the biggest ever. So we're trying to do everything we can to make life just a little more affordable for people. And you got to make sure that don't let people pit the environment against affordability. We got to show how we do both.
Renewables
reduce our energy bills and create those local union jobs that you're talking about. So I don't see any negative to it. And it also can help save the planet. So let's get busy on that again. Right, Governor?
Sounds good to me, Bill.
You know, I know we're coming to the end of our time with you, Governor, and we really appreciate you taking so much time. We know you have a very busy schedule, but I know a lot of us know and have a great deal of respect for you as our governor, but don't necessarily know your origin story or why you decided to do what you do. Can you just tell us a little bit about what makes you tick
and
why
Ned
you're
the governor? Ned become the governor?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Melissa. Well, first of all, I'm the first governor, I think, comes out of business, small business. Mm-hmm. I started a business. It wasn't a crypto firm. We built
Thank you.
Can identify with. We built telecommunication systems. We didn't have a hard time paying the minimum wage. We paid five times the minimum wage because I wanted to make sure we had the best people working there, proud to work there. And I wanted to show real respect for the people who were doing our job, and they showed real respect for what they were doing. You know, along the way, I was always very involved in my community. I thought that's what you do in life. I was board of selectmen. I was board of finance. I helped oversee the state pension fund.
Oof.
And then I'd done some work in the Middle East. And when President Bush Jr. Decided to invade Iraq, that's when I stood up. And that's when I got more involved in the political world than I'd ever dreamed of doing.
That was your line in the sand. Yeah, that's a good time.
And now we're at another line
in
the sand. What do you make about the war with Iran? Or the non-war with Iran.
I feel like I've seen this movie before, Bill. I think it's a tragic. I think we're making the situation worse. And, you know, I think a lot of people wish they could maybe go back to where we were under Obama.
Yeah.
You know, Strait of Hormuz was open. Gas was a lot less expensive. Yeah. And by the way, you had inspectors every day in Iran checking on the nuclear material.
Yep.
No more.
We certainly haven't made any progress.
Those inspectors would be hung at this point.
It's concerning. Well, Governor, I wish we could ask you to stay with us a little longer, but I know you and you are welcome to. But we're going to have to go to commercial. What's that?
Hey, you guys are great. Thank you, Bill. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while, Melissa. Good to see you.
Will you come back and visit us again soon?
Sign me up.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank you
again. Have a great day, and thanks for everything you do for our state.
Bye bye.
All right, we will be right back after these messages. This is Wake Up on WICC.
Fairfield County Talk for Sunday morning. Wake Up with Finch and Kane is live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
Well, that was really fun talking to the governor. I very much enjoyed our conversation. We've been waiting for a while for him to come. I'm looking forward to having Josh Elliott on. I'd like to hear
his story
as well. I mean,
we
there's really no
to ask
doubt
him what gives him hope.
I didn't get a chance. Yeah. I feel like
but
we need to send
him
an email next
later.
Time. What gives him hope? I think he might say what gives him hope is the great deal of resiliency that we see in the state of Connecticut.
Yeah. It's just,
you know, and I would argue, I can't speak for the governor, but having heard him speak in the past, that our Secretary of the State and our work for protecting the vote here in Connecticut is something that gives us hope. I mean, it goes back to, I think, our argument at the beginning of the show, which is why we need very, very strong
leadership control.
And state control at this point.
It's ironic. It sort of flipped the script, right? With Democrats were saying in the 60s that state control will give us racism and the Ku Klux Klan, which it did. But now states' rights are to protect those things from encroachment from authoritarian neo-fascist approaches from Washington. I really believe, look, I love Connecticut, and a lot of times we'll have Bob Duff on and we'll have Corey Paris on.
Yeah, they're going to come on. We would, folks, if you're tuning in, and last week you heard me say we were going to have Bob Duff and Corey Paris. We did sadly have to bump them for the governor. I believe they're coming the week. I think they're going to be here hopefully the 17th. Because we do want to go through a lot of the amazing things on this note that have been passed during this legislative session, which is ending this
Wednesday. Why is Connecticut more and more Democratic? It's because our policies, Democratic policies, are policies that resonate with the majority of the workers and the voters in Connecticut. And we are a role model for the way the country should be going, and we have to fight this little feisty state.
If we do say so ourselves.
We have to fight, you know. But historically, it occurs to me, you know, I love reading Connecticut history. I love Connecticut. And Governor Trumbull was the only governor. Let me repeat. Wake up, everyone. Wake up. Jonathan Trumbull, the governor during the Revolution, was the only governor to endorse the Revolution. The other 12 were pawns of the king.
Yeah.
They didn't support. George Washington talked about Connecticut as the provision state because we supported the last little tiny candle of light under the basket.
And you, Bill, you were there. You were there making bullets. Were there getting gunpowder together, making pins.
I love to read. I just read Newt Gingrich's book about the Battle of Trenton.
Jesus,
if it
Newt
weren't
Gingrich.
For the Battle of Trenton, do you know how the soldiers
Trenton? I honestly can't believe you brought up Newt Gingrich. I'm sorry. He may have.
You know,
but he and
Phyllis
Schlafly are behind a manufactured culture war that has led us to where we are today.
You know,
so
listen,
sorry.
Every clock is right twice. A broken clock is right twice a day. And this was a 12.
But I don't want to sell his
59.
Books.
No, but the point. I've read other books. I'll try to quote others, but about the Battle of Trenton, the soldiers were so impassioned to fight for freedom against authoritarianism that they had no shoes. They were attacking during a hurricane. They followed the path of the blood from the bleeding soldiers to find the way to fight against the British and the Hessians so that we could have our freedom.
It's a really good point.
Connecticut,
let me ask you a question.
Gave the most number of soldiers.
We did, and it was a very, very, very different time, and it certainly is storied, so we don't know exactly what happened. But let me ask you this question. It seems to me, and you and I have been doing this work, we've been doing the climate work, we've been doing the food insecurity work, we've been doing the gun violence work for years, and we both know something to be true, that no one, almost no one, stands up and fights back unless something touches them directly.
Yeah.
You got to be, my friend says to me, you got to be, touch the stove. You got to get burnt a couple of times because people can't stand to be uncomfortable.
Well, let's hope
people
that the country's
aren't
been burned by
the
Trump
British
enough
soldiers
to never go right again.
Shoeless.
Yeah.
So how do we get people to fight the British soldiers without shoes in this day and age? Because I don't see it happening, and it's what needs to happen now. And on, I keep saying this, we need to be the peaceful and persistent resistance, but we need to be the effective resistance.
Yeah.
And we talk about turnout for this election, and that is very, very important. But it also has to be, I don't know, in my opinion, I think we've got to be talking to the people who haven't been voting in places like Louisiana, in places where votes just got harder to cast. How do we convince people to do that?
Well, it's person to person. That's what I love about politics. We can make changes in people's minds. But I think the one thing we have to do is respect the people who are in the MAGA cult. They need to be deprogrammed. They need to be given information, not hated, but we, you know, we had Steve Hassan on the show who wrote the book, The Cult of Trump, and he exits people out of high controlling groups and cults. And he says, listen, show love to them.
Yes.
Show compassion. Show understanding. I understand you were really angry. But does that anger help you to get a better retirement? Does that anger help you to stay safe from guns? Does that anger fight climate change?
Can we show people that their anger could be better used to actually fight something? I know.
This is why I say, Melissa, that Connecticut is the role model. We're the land of steady habits. We're not the land of blow-dried liberals or anarchists who throw bombs in Washington and tear down the White House and put their name on the Kennedy Center.
Is blow-dried liberal going to come up in every show we have from now on? I think it is.
Listen, liberal is a great thing if it means you're open-minded to new ideas. But to be knee-jerk, either left or right, at this point is not what the country needs,
is it?
And
I'm saying beyond being liberal, I'm saying be effective.
Yeah.
I'm saying actually say I have to get myself out of my comfortable zone, out of my comfort zone.
We had Bill Curry on. I don't know if you remember that or not. And Bill Curry said when you knock on somebody's door, of which you and I have done thousands and thousands of times trying to persuade voters to vote a certain way, the first thing you have to...
Or even just to vote.
Yeah, just to vote. But the first thing you have to answer is, you know, why are you there? You know, is what you're selling going to help me? Does it work? And is it going to cost me a lot of money? If we can answer those questions, most of the things Democrats push in the long run save you tons of money. Renewable energy is going to lower your electric bills.
But first, they have to go through a little discomfort.
Is going to make kids who can be employed. So all of the things we do take care of. But as I said earlier in the show, some of this is incremental. And their anger and their racism and the things they sell, their misogyny and their patriarchy, those are things that resonate quickly in the immediate and get people to change and get angry.
Yeah, they're clickbait.
Yeah.
Right.
We have to sell a better lifestyle, and that's where Connecticut comes in. We have the best lifestyle in the country.
I like that. So let me ask you a question. We are coming to the end of our time, and as you all know, I have a question that I ask all of our guests, and I ask Bill, and I ask myself, and that is, what, if anything, is giving you hope in this moment? I'm going to let you go first, Bill, because I've got a good one this week.
Well, mine is pretty simple. I watch Morning Joe in the morning, and I listen to CNN, and I read the New York Times. So maybe people say that's blow-dried liberal. I don't know. But
you should see his head of hair.
The polling, yeah, it's come back. My hair's back, everybody. You should see. It's a hair for radio is what it is. the polling numbers of Donald Trump have showed that the American public have repudiated the right-wing crap that he's been selling. I do believe it has. They've been woken up because of our show and other thousands of shows like us around the country where we're talking about how to make America better.
Talking with respect.
Yeah.
And
Listen, I have people I know that voted MAGA, and I feel terrible. I mean, I'm in therapy over it. But you know, they're not bad people.
So you're saying welcome people back into the fold and show them
the better way.
What we could actually all do together.
It's the future's
Listen,
not
I,
dark.
I
the
think
future's
you
bright.
Are very hopeful. I have to say this week, as I started the show by saying, I am gutted. I am not all that hopeful. And I really entered this show thinking, what can I say? What can I talk about when it comes to hope? And then I heard a speech that James Tallarico, who is the Democratic.
Hopefully the new senator from Texas,
he's the candidate for Senate in Texas. And he gave a speech at a historically black college, a small one in Texas this week, Paul Quinn College. And he talked about the disillusionment of Gen Z. And I think of many people, not just Gen Z, but by what has happened in this country and what has happened in particular this week. And he said something that he turned disillusionment around, and I really thought that was incredible. He said, disillusionment means being freed from illusions to see reality.
Mm.
And to know the truth, as painful as it may be, your disillusionment is a superpower. You can see the world as it is and dream of the way it ought to be.
Some men see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they could be and ask why not. Bobby Kennedy.
Exactly.
So as much as we have hope and we want to remain hopeful and have this show wake people up to what's going on, the one overwhelming thing I'm always coming back to is the way that this redistricting battle has been splitting our country. It's obviously got a lot of racist intentions by overturning the Voting Rights Act, taking black people's rights away. But if you combine the gerrymandering with Citizens United, which makes safe districts for either party through gerrymandering, and then wealthy people and corporations can spend unlimited amounts of money on those races, it's buying those seats. And it's also buying Supreme Court seats. So when we see the Voting Rights Act gutted by six conservative, I wish I could come up with a better word, knuckleheads who are destroying these principles of democracy we've all fought so hard to establish in the United States of America. And then you put on top of that tax policies that allow the 1% and the 0.1% to control most of the country's wealth. You know, 90% of the country has 25% of the wealth.
I know.
And 10% of the country has 75% of the wealth. So these are things that...
we got to keep talking
about
this
take
stuff.
Our hope away.
Yep.
But if we look at the way that things are moving, I think perhaps they're moving in a better direction.
I would like to believe that. And I have to tell you...
what did
I
you
am,
say?
I
they
am,
had to touch the hot stove, right?
Yeah.
And they're touching it, and they're pulling their hand away.
And talking about the things that Bill just mentioned are all the things that we need to be looking at and making sure that we can restructure and change. It's campaign finance reform. It's, you know, perhaps building out the Supreme Court. There's many things. But I'm looking at the time, and we are almost done with our time for this week. But I am so excited because I think we're going to continue this conversation next week on our very, very special Mother's Day show, which I am thrilled about. I couldn't be more excited because we will have the mother of us
just
all.
Just so you know, she's really excited. I can see it in her face.
I am. We have the mother of the resistance. Rosa DeLauro will be joining
Mama
us.
Mama Rosa.
Mama Rosa. So please, moms, start your Mother's Day with us as your kids bring you breakfast
in bed.
Stir
that spaghetti sauce and listen to
have us
Mama
on
Rosa.
Have us on in the background. And if you are not celebrating Mother's Day, then come on and celebrate the resistance with one of the greatest members of Congress, our own Rosa DeLauro, our real Connecticut.
I first met her when she was working for Chris Dodd, and you could see that she was destined for greatness.
We're going to talk about that more next week. We have a huge thank you to our guest this morning, Governor Ned Lamont, for joining Bill and me, and to our wonderful producer, Isabella, and to Connoisseur Media for making Wake Up happen, and to all of you, our listeners, to waking up with us. I'm Melissa Kane, so happy to be here with Bill Finch, and we will be back next week with Representative Rosa DeLauro waking up right here on WICC. Have a wonderful Sunday. Stay engaged and stay strong.